Tucker Carlson breaks establishment narratives and outlines five key takeaways from his interview with Vladimir Putin. A pharma insider unveils Big Pharma's open secret. And Dr. Peter McCullough joins us with a serious warning that we are heading towards a one-world government with the World Health Organization at the helm of medical tyranny. All of that and more today. I'm Maria Z of ZMedia.com, and this is Vigilant Fox's Media Blackout. This week we saw a monumental interview with Tucker Carlson and President Vladimir Putin. In the lead up to the interview, almost every single lying mainstream media outlet aired their disdain at a journalist doing their job. Journalism. Journalism is about challenging the narrative, presenting both sides, speaking with those you agree with and those you don't. This is particularly vital in a time of war, and especially when the world is on the brink of World War III, because the interests of those in control have nothing to do with peace and are often more inclined to favour the interests of the military-industrial complex. Watching the leftist media absolutely break down with multiple false headlines and statements prior to the interview even having aired has truly been a sight to behold, with MSNBC pulling out of the basement of irrelevance Hillary Clinton, who referred to Tucker as a useful idiot and a puppy dog for Putin. We suppose that may be why barely anyone is watching them anymore. But those who reserve their commentary until they actually watch the interview would agree that Tucker's intention was to hear from President Putin directly rather than the government's propaganda arm known as CNN. And in fact, he did a stellar job. He challenged Putin on multiple occasions about the timing Russia decided to act on the Ukraine situation. He aimed to listen to the history of the coup Putin described in great detail. He wanted to know who really blew up Nord Stream, because the lying media certainly won't tell us. He advocated on behalf of an MSM journalist who was accused of espionage. There are many lessons learned from this interview. The main one, in my personal opinion, is that we should always have open dialogue, even with those some may consider their enemy. When you do, you may just find out that the supposed enemy is actually open to peace talks, and the side that continuously tells you the alleged enemy isn't is actually the side that continues to stifle any attempts at peace. It also happens to be the side in bed with the military-industrial complex, but I digress. While there are many other lessons people could take away from this interview, Tucker Carlson has highlighted some of his key takeaways, and they're condensed in this article now up on the Vigilant News Network. "I'm not exactly sure what I thought of the interview," said Carlson. "It's probably going to take me a year to decide what that was." Carlson said there's no question that Putin is smart. However, he expressed that the Russian president is not good at explaining himself. Nonetheless, Carlson named five big picture quick perceptions following his interview. Number one was that Putin was very wounded by the rejection of the West. During the interview, Putin shared an account with then-President Bill Clinton about the possibility of Russia joining NATO. According to Putin, Clinton first answered, "I think so," to the proposition, but after speaking with others, he said, "It's just not possible." Carlson asked Putin if he was sincere about this, and Putin said he was. And he concluded in his post-interview statements that that was the whole point of NATO, to basically contain Russia. And Putin was wounded by this. Number two, that Russia is not an expansionist power. Carlson said you'd have to be an idiot to think that. Well, why does he think that? Because Russia is too big already. It's the biggest landmass in the world. They only have 150 million people. They have an abundance of natural resources. And so the idea that they'd want to take over Poland, why would they want to do that? They just want secure borders, which is really every single country should be wanting that. Putin likely wants peace in Ukraine. He described the way that Boris Johnson got involved in stonewalling the previous peace requests. Putin admitted that he does want a peace deal in some way, and he said it a couple of different times. Carlson says again, maybe he's lying in ways I didn't perceive, but he kept saying it. And I don't know why he would say it if he didn't mean it. As a matter of fact, Carlson continued, there is evidence, overwhelming, that there was a peace deal, or part of a peace deal, with the beginning of peace talks, as a settlement of some sort on the table a year and a half ago, and that the former president of Great Britain, Boris Johnson, as I just mentioned before, scuttled on behalf of the Biden administration and convinced Zelensky and the Ukrainian government not to enter into these talks. Number four, demands for Russia to relinquish Crimea are insane. US officials have said on the record and have said to me and are telling a bunch of people that part of the terms have to be Russia giving up Crimea, Carlson exclaimed. He added Crimea was in Russian hands at the beginning of this war and warned Putin would go to war, nuclear war, if it came down to Crimea. So if you really think that a condition of peace is that Putin is going to give up Crimea, then you're like a lunatic. And number five, the United States track record with regime change is spotty at best. We're run by nutcases, Carlson deplored. The president and that poisonous moron, Victoria Nuland. Oh, we're going to depose Putin. Well, then what happens? Carlson asked. He recalled past incidents in US history where depositions of foreign leaders did not go so well. He referenced Libya, what happened in Iraq when we brought Saddam to justice. Those countries fell apart and they've never been rebuilt again. Carlson continued, in Afghanistan, we took out the central government and they came back. It's still run by the Taliban. So our track record of knocking out the leader, which is very easy to do, is spotty at best. Things don't always get better. And to do that to Russia, the largest landmass in the world with the largest nuclear arsenal, you're on drugs. If you think that's a good idea, we encourage everyone to watch that full interview linked in the article and go to the Tucker Carlson Network to watch his commentary. As I mentioned before, there were many key takeaways from this interview. I was particularly alarmed by Putin's statements that essentially there's no stopping the AI revolution and gene editing, and most would agree with him that stopping it would be out of the question now. It's simply gone too far. Putin suggested governance and working with people like Elon Musk would be the best solution. Many people are growing more concerned with this subject around the world. What impact will AI have on jobs? We've already had multiple MSM outlets priming the thinking of the population that the majority of people will have to transition to a UBI because AI will take 95% of jobs. This is certainly happening in the case of modeling, video editing, the medical industry. It'll happen in accounting, in law. I mean, the possibilities are really endless. As far as gene editing goes, some may think it could be really helpful to mankind in eliminating disease, whilst others are very concerned about how this will be weaponized against humanity by those who control the technology, and this is a legitimate concern. We'll touch on that more with Dr. McCullough later in the broadcast. But one thing is for sure. Tucker Carlson just impacted the world in a huge way with this conversation and really has shown the world that unless the MSM is able to display that skill set, they aren't able to be considered journalists ever again. What were your key takeaways? Let us know in the comments below. We'd love to hear from you. And now a message from our sponsor, The Wellness Company. Everyone knows the next medical crisis is just around the corner. Whether it comes in the form of a pandemic or something much more mundane like a tick bite, you and your family need to be prepared. That's where The Wellness Company comes in. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust, and their new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy. Be ready for anything. This medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak. The medical emergency kit provides a guidebook to aid in the safe use of all of these life-saving medications. From anthrax to tick bites to COVID and even to a bioweapon like the plague, the Wellness Company's medical emergency kit is exactly what you need to have on hand to be prepared. Rest assured knowing that you have the emergency antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics on hand to help keep you and your family safe. Go to twc.health/blackout today and order. That's twc.health/blackout and use the promo code blackout to save 10%. Our next story, a Democrat has said the quiet part out loud. Our strategy failed. The people we care about most, the undocumented Americans. This is just unbelievable, guys. The clip appeared on MSNBC. Please take a look at this.
The negotiation didn't have a path to citizenship. It was entirely on their terms in order to get Ukraine funding, right?
Well, I mean, Chris, that's been a failed play for 20 years. So right. You are right that that has been the Democratic strategy for 30 years, maybe. And it has failed to deliver for the people we care about most, the undocumented Americans that are in this country.
Oh, my goodness. Immigration expert Stephen Miller weighed in. This is what they call giving away the entire game. This is why Democrats angrily oppose every enforcement measure. This is why Democrats bitterly oppose detention and deportation. This is why Joe Biden and the Democrats eradicated the border and orchestrated the invasion. Yet another display from the mainstream media of who they really care about, which is never the American people. That's why they keep lying to you every day. They're literally saying the most important people in the country aren't even the illegals. It's the illegals that you know nothing about. The undocumented ones. The ones you don't even know are there. Potential MS-13 gang members, CCP spies, drug dealers, terrorists, human traffickers. They're the ones we care about most, whilst Americans are struggling with the cost of living and filling up a single tank of gas. What a disgrace. Our next story, fired Star Wars actress sues Disney after Elon Musk offers funding. Actress Gina Carano is suing the Disney Corporation, announcing billionaire tech entrepreneur Elon Musk is financially backing the lawsuit after the company fired her from a role over posts she made on Twitter. Disney fired the ex-MMA fighter in February of 2021 from her role on The Mandalorian following several social media posts pushing back against various establishment narratives, including the cancel culture against conservatives, COVID lockdowns, vaccines, and more. Today is an important day for me. I'm filing a lawsuit against Lucasfilm and Disney, Carano said in an ex post Tuesday. She said, after my 20 years of building a career from scratch and during the regime of former Disney CEO Bob Chapek, Lucasfilm made this statement on Twitter, terminating me from The Mandalorian. Quote, Gina Carano is not currently employed by Lucasfilm and there are no plans for her to be in the future. Nevertheless, her social media posts denigrating people based on their cultural and religious identities are abhorrent and unacceptable, end quote. She says nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, during the COVID hysteria of 2021, Carano shared a meme urging people to reject hatred instilled via government propaganda, which somehow got misconstrued by the MSM as she compared conservatives to Jews in the Holocaust. Well, as you can see, she was simply drawing comparisons between Nazi Germany and COVID tyranny. She was also encouraging businesses to open up and people to go to church and exercise their religious freedoms. She was joking about the safety of mailing an injection to you, the same, and comparing it to the safety of mail-in ballots. She was making fun of, people that wear masks and suggesting they should put it on their eyes so they could see what's really going on. People who multiple mask. I mean, most people would find this stuff funny and lighthearted, which is actually what she was trying to do. She says, the thing is, I never used aggressive language. I shared thought-provoking quotes, pictures, memes, and occasionally I used my own words, not with aggression, but with respect and the occasional comedy to keep the mood light in dark times, which most people would agree that's exactly what we needed to do. She tells people, look with your own eyes at what I posted. And Elon Musk actually tweeted some time ago, if you were unfairly treated by your employer due to posting or liking something on this platform, we will fund your legal bill. No limit. Please let us know. She said, quite the noble offer, but never in my wildest dreams would I have thought anyone would take on my case against Lucasfilm or Disney. Still, I didn't respond back. I think I qualify and thousands of people agreed, but I did not expect anything. Well, she went on to announce the lawsuit and to her surprise, Musk went on to ask people discriminated by Disney or its subsidiaries to contact him for legal support. And you can see those tweets there. Musk also went on to talk about if you were discriminated against by Disney or its subsidiaries, ABC, ESPN, Marvel, etc., just reply to this post to receive legal support. He has truly stuck to his word. And here's a very interesting expose shared by Elon. An anonymous source just sent me this from Disney. It is mandatory institutionalized racism and sexism. And we encourage everyone to take a look at that. It's unbelievable. A very noble offer from Musk indeed, and a huge contribution for the battle of free speech. Ultimately, that's what it comes down to for Carano. This ridiculous cancel culture and deeming everything too inappropriate to say out loud has plagued society for too long, and people are simply fed up with it. In fact, history shows us that the more you repress people, the more rebellious they become, the more outrageous the things they say will become. We've looked at these posts by Carano and don't think there was anything outrageous about them, and that's obviously evident to Musk, who has kept his word in helping to fund this lawsuit. We'll be tracking the outcome closely. And resolving to eat healthier this year was easy. Actually doing it? Not so easy. Better nutrition is a key to health and longevity, and a healthy diet could even help you avoid health risks that run in your family. Field of Greens is our healthy superfruit and vegetable habit. It's the only fruit and vegetable product that literally promises better health. At your next checkup, your doctor will notice your improved health or your money back. Do your vitamins or green drinks promise better health? Nope. Each superfruit and vegetable in Field of Greens was doctor selected for a specific health benefit. Some support your heart, lungs, and kidneys. Others support metabolism for healthy energy and weight loss. Look, if you resolve to get healthier in 24, it starts with Field of Greens. We got you 15% off for your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use promo code BLACKOUT. That's promo code BLACKOUT at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. It may or may not come as a surprise, but TV pharmaceutical ads are illegal in every country besides the United States and New Zealand. One of the reasons for that is a big concern that pharmaceutical advertising could influence editorial decisions within media organisations. Well, just over a week ago, pharma insider Callie Means appeared on Tucker Carlson to unveil and discuss the unconscionable relationship between big pharma and the media and its implications on fair and balanced journalism. We've got an exclusive interview for you now with pharma insider Callie Means. He joins us right now. Callie Means, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your time.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I am absolutely very impressed with your latest interview with Tucker Carlson. You recently appeared, all of the internet saw your interview. Your conversations even, or the points at least that you raised, have even made it into the presidential discussion, which is vital for our times. I really do want to highlight what came out of that interview, which has got the world's attention, how pharma subverts the news. But let's start with the dangers of Ozempic and your passion, which is really highlighting the root cause of illness in today's society.
Yeah, so what I bring to this as a former pharma consultant is witnessing the rigging of the institution of trust. So what public relations offices and lobbying offices in DC are doing are choosing professors to fund. So pharma is the biggest funder of research. And in the case of Ozempic, there's been an all-out assault to say this drug is safe. And it's been actually approved, believe it or not, for children. This is a lifetime drug. And it's been approved for children and endorsed by the American Academy of Pediatrics based on a 68-week study that didn't even take into account important things like muscle mass. It was a totally rigged study. So they fund the research, then they fund the media. As we've talked about, pharma is 60% of mainstream news funding on TV. And 60 Minutes and the CNN and the New York Times all run pieces saying Ozempic is safe using that research, actually saying you're anti-science if you have any questions about Ozempic. Then they fund the actual medical groups, the American Academy of Pediatrics, who say that we need to give this to kids. They fund the NAACP to say it's racist to go against the science. So you can see it's just very simple. It's directing money to every single institution that we trust. And the argument here is that the chronic disease treadmill that we've been on as a country, where every drug we prescribe, the chronic disease that drug is trying to treat goes up, it's been bankrupting the country, literally. We're saying we just need more of that. That's what we're being led to believe.
Well, I think it's fascinating because we're seeing the same tactics, in my opinion, deployed during COVID, which is if you have any questions, you're anti-science, you're racist, you're this, you're that. And so it seems to be a model that they saw work during COVID. They're trying to re-employ that model, I suppose.
Yeah, I think a big strategy here is using these institutions of trust to have Americans take leave of their common sense. you know, obviously on its face, a miracle drug that's going to solve the obesity crisis, when obesity is clearly not the issue of itself, but one sign of underlying metabolic dysfunction that's causing the diabetes explosion, that's causing the explosion of cancer rates, that's causing the explosion of autoimmune conditions. All these things are going up all at once. It's not because we're deficient in Ozempic, right? That's not the root cause, but it's about money. This is the largest and fastest growing industry in the country. We still, I think, mistakenly in the United States have this fetish for elite academic institutions and believe what they say, even though they're totally conflicted. And the executives at pharma, having worked with them, know how to play this game, right? They know how to pay off the groups, you know, that will call somebody a racist if you disagree with the research that they've funded. You know, the result I keep going to is we're the only animals that have systematic obesity, humans and animals we've domesticated. There's not an obesity epidemic or a diabetes epidemic in the wild among wolves or giraffes, right? It's only the animals that are listening to these experts that are reading this rigged research that have chronic diseases, because chronic diseases are beautiful for the medical system. And we all have to understand this. They're beautiful for the medical system because you don't die right away and you keep getting more chronic diseases and you keep needing to treat them for life. It's recurring revenue. This is like you couldn't have made a better business model in a lab for the healthcare industry. That's why they're creating research to profit on more and more treatments for the rising rates of chronic disease and have no interest in why we're actually getting these diseases in the first place. In the case of obesity, obviously it's food. And we literally have doctors from Harvard, Dr. Fatima Cody Stanford, the lead obesity researcher at Harvard. She said on 60 Minutes, obesity is not tied to what we eat and it's not tied to willpower. It's a genetic condition. You cannot make this up.
Unbelievable. And I heard you speaking about something which really piqued my interest. You were talking about the silos and how doctors are essentially trained to only look at this much. And I think that most people would who suffer from any chronic conditions would feel the pain of that. They go and see one specialist, they have to go to another for another issue. And really, all of them are interconnected. So talk to us about that interconnection.
So my sister was the pride of the family. She was top of her class Stanford med school and a head and neck surgeon. And 10 years into training, she was doing a sinusitis surgery, cutting out a woman's inflammation in her sinuses. She was so sick that she had to, her face had to be cut open to take out the signs of inflammation. And Casey looked at that patient's charts, and the patient had 8 other comorbidities, had seen 8 other doctors, had been on 8 other treatment plans, diabetes, depression, heart disease, high blood pressure, et cetera. And for the first time in over 10 years of training, she asked, what could the connection be? She realized that in 10 years at Stanford Medical School and surgical residency, she was not asked or trained once to ask whether diabetes could be related to inflammation, to ask whether that inflammation could be related to the heart disease, to even ask the mental health connections. That's treated as totally separate. She realized that at Stanford Medical School, she wasn't offered one nutrition class, and that 90% of doctors in the United States graduate without taking a nutrition class, and that 80% of medical school education is around pharmacology, right? And she put this piece together. But this siloing of health, the fact that at graduation, doctors choose between one of 42 specialties, that Casey was responsible for a couple millimeters of the face. And if she had a fellowship, she would have focused even more. That's how you rise up in medicine, by siloing. But I want to say this very clearly. If you look at the causes of death in America, there are chronic conditions that are foodborne illnesses, heart disease, diabetes, kidney disease, respiratory illness, even COVID, which only killed metabolically unhealthy people, right? If you were practicing good lifestyle habits, you had an almost 0% chance of dying of COVID. This is being obfuscated. It's being hidden. Casey was reprimanded for talking about dietary interventions in the hospital. It's very simple, right? And I don't think even many people realize this, but the invisible hand of this corrupt system is profiting from people being sick and absolutely training doctors and incentivizing them not to ask why so many sick patients are walking to their hospital, but asking how can we profit on managing, not curing their conditions. This is the issue of our time. RFK is speaking very eloquently about it. And I have to give credit to President Trump, who's actually making some strong statements on this as well.
Yeah, I have to agree. We're certainly seeing this now where, you know, a lot of people have had negative outcomes from the COVID injections, for example, and doctors are flat out denying that that could possibly be the cause, not even investigating. I mean, just a common sense approach would be, okay, you were in perfect health 3 years ago. What's changed? What have you introduced into your life? Have you started Have you changed your diet? I mean, these are questions doctors used to ask. Have you changed your diet? You know, have we introduced a new medication? Do you think that this training of doctors has actually, that you're describing at prestigious universities, mm-hmm. has actually caused a dumbing down of the doctor population as well?
Oh, yes. Doctors have the highest rate of burnout and suicide of any profession in the country. It's actually a tragic situation. There's easier ways to make money. And the U.S. healthcare system is a magnet for some of the best and brightest in the world who get in the system to do the right thing. But the New York Times recently ran an article, and the mental health epidemic in mass among doctors, they liken to soldiers who are then forced to commit war crimes. The medical profession is soldiers who got into the fight for the right reasons, but realize they're actually in a system that is doing evil. And that is universally seen either consciously or subconsciously by doctors. And they feel trapped because our system, very smartly from the system's perspective, straps them with a lot of debt and the expectations of society and all the titles of these prestigious positions to have them go on the system. But any doctor that does not feel trapped in a broken system and trapped in a system that fundamentally isn't making patients better is either in denial or just not thinking. I think most doctors do know that.
Wow, that's very powerful. I recall speaking to a lot of doctors during the COVID era who were saying, you know, we're not giving patients, you know, we're not giving people preventative advice. We've abandoned medicine, essentially. And what I'm seeing, right. particularly from and I guess this is to one of my earlier points, there's been a continuation of that post-COVID, even in the case of Ozempic, where it's like the industry has moved away from any type of investigation and it's just pushing drugs and there's no holds barred anymore, it seems, Callie.
This is a key point I want to make because I think the system, and my sister is really trained that food and lifestyle is in this niche preventative bucket. Actually, these basic lifestyle interventions, which we could incentivize, are the best reversal techniques. So if you go back to COVID was the biggest public policy mistake in our lifetime since World War II. I mean, this is a societally defining mistake that will have ramifications for the next generation. And actually, from a pure, not even preventative, but reversal, and once you got COVID, managing the COVID, Dr. Fauci could have talked about how this is, our immune systems are weak, about how we're dying of COVID at a much higher rate than Japan and other European countries. That we could really fortify our immune systems, and you can change around your metabolic health very quickly in a couple months, right? And that's actually a way to reverse diabetes, heart disease, other things like that. It's the best way to reverse. So the fact that we have an all-out assault from the media, government officials on pharmaceutical interventions and not a national effort to improve our metabolic health and incentivize that. We spend $4.5 trillion in healthcare, right? That's growing faster than any other industry. The largest and fastest growing industry in the country, producing worse outcomes for every dollar spent, right? It would be disruptive to that growth, but very powerful from a medical perspective. If we ask from a public policy perspective, how can we get Americans healthier, right? You look at the pictures of people 60 years ago, they were all thin, they were all healthy, the metabolic health crises wasn't there. We didn't become lazier in the past two generations. We've been poisoned. And the public policy response to that, and it's conservative, I'm a libertarian, we've rigged the market, we need to unrig the market. And there's very simple ways we can do that. RFK is talking about that, President Trump is talking about it. Not just as this niche preventative, but actually for the reversal of the chronic diseases that are destroying our country, particularly kids.
There's a key element, I guess, to unrigging that market, which also involves people being informed and not willing to really participate in this system. Part of that is the awareness that you're raising. But do you think that post the COVID era, people are a lot more willing to take that personal accountability, take responsibility for their health? Have you seen that shift?
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, it's evidenced by the viewers viewing right now. What I think my theory of change is that we're actually seeing a bottoms-up revolution now. I do think eventually we need to change top-down because you've got $4.7 trillion of the healthcare industry, 4.5 to 4.7, no matter, depending on how you look at it, really incentivizing Americans to be sick. That's really hard to compete with. And then we have a poisoned food supply based on crony capitalism. So my goal eventually is to change top-down. That's happening from the bottoms up. The best book selling books in the country are talking about metabolic health and taking matters into their own hand. Many Americans are now taking their health data in their own hands with biowearables, which I think are very important, which is actually giving Americans data inside their own bodies, which you wouldn't believe this, but those are being fought by the medical system. There's actually a denigration of continuous glucose monitors or other body monitors by the medical system, saying, no, we need that data. You don't need to see what's going on inside your body. They're actually trying to legislate it in some ways. It's actually extraordinary. Wow. The medical system doesn't want us to have data, but we're getting it. The books, the podcasts, the social media, you know, you go from Joe Rogan on down, you know, whether it's a mixed martial artist, commentator slash comedian, or a doctor, or what have you, everyone in this country on their podcast that are most listened to are talking about metabolic health. I found it so interesting during COVID with leaked emails with Dr. Fauci, the head of the NIH, saying Joe Rogan was one of the most dangerous people in America. And listen to his podcast, he's talking about exercising and eating healthy and being a good person and having good metabolic health. That is actually a disruptive message.
Yes. And I guess the other key thing is that really you highlighted how the pharmaceuticals are really subverting the news or even right. own the news, but they're subverting or impacting public opinion based on their impact on the news. So I certainly see a shift, and I want to get your perspective, where people aren't really watching the news all that much anymore. They're not really watching mainstream programs all that much anymore. So do you feel that influence has gone down, or is it still very much a very healthy machine?
It's a fight. The independent media revolution is, I think, a historically disruptive force, you know, on the plane of Benjamin Franklin, you know, early on printing stuff about the American Revolution. I mean, I really think we have a massive shift in how media is happening and how people are getting information. We're cutting out the middleman, and there is a violent opposition to that from the status quo. So I think it is waning, but I think this point is important about pharma. When more than 50% of your bills are paid by one industry, you are going to explicitly censor yourself and you're going to self-censor yourself. Tucker's talked about this at the dynamics at Fox, and any journalist will tell you, RFK's talked a lot about it. That's the key thing helping to direct marketing dollars from pharma to the news agencies. It wasn't to influence consumers. It wasn't to have you watch that goofy ad and buy that drug. They know you're going to probably get that drug and be pushed that drug. The fact that pharma spends so much on news advertising buys the news itself. So that's why you have this disconnect where the most popular independent media, you know, from Russell Brand to Joe Rogan to Barry Weiss, they're digging deep into the corruption of our healthcare system. This is the most important issue. The fact that we're getting sicker, more depressed, more infertile, and our children are suffering. This is the most important issue to Americans. And it's the number one topic discussed on independent media based on my analysis.
Yeah.
No curiosity on the mainstream news about why 33% of young adults have prediabetes, about why 25% of teens have fatty liver disease, about why 40% of high schoolers, you know, have a mental health disorder, and 15% are on a methamphetamine Adderall. There's nothing. There's no analysis. I didn't see any skeptical analysis of the pharmaceutical solution. These solutions for various chronic conditions. These folks are cheerleaders for Ozempic. They're not getting to the root cause of why 80% of Americans are overweight or obese, which is clearly something very, very wrong is happening. That's worthy of real investigatory insight. So that's what the money buys you. I still think that is very important and is what most people go by. Most people still trust these systems and relatively, you know, are influenced by what they see on the mainstream media. So we've got to keep attacking that.
Absolutely agree with you. Another point I might highlight is the amount of funding from Big Pharma that goes to the World Health Organization, who's trying to push through this two courses of action, the International Health Regulation Amendments and the Pandemic Treaty or Accord or whatever it is that you they keep changing the name, CA+. Either way, this is very, very dangerous because what they're trying to do is really own world health. And when you have these same pharmaceuticals who are essentially brainwashing the public through the media and governments that aren't interested in finding out why there are so many excess deaths around the world. They've actually, in Australia, they voted against finding out why so many Australians are dying. It's unbelievable. And so, you know, this pharma complex really has to come down. So we're very grateful for your contribution to that, Kelly. I want to bring up your book, Good Energy. People can find it on Amazon, The Surprising Connection Between Metabolism and Limitless Health, coming out in May. Where can people follow your work, Kelly?
Yeah, Twitter, X, at Callie Means. My company's TrueMed.com, where we're actually writing medical notes for food and exercise interventions and driving tax-free dollars to those root cause solutions, which I think is vital. We've got to change incentives. And then Good Energy, as I talked about, super inspired by my sister who left the system and is speaking out. We wrote this book after the death of our mother from a preventable condition. And it's a systemic overview and bottoms up solutions. As you said, this revolution is happening from people taking health in their own hands. And through my sister's genius, this is the best compendium of metabolic health tips to feel better today, I think, ever put to paper. And we're really excited about this book.
Well, we're very grateful for you, Callie, not only for your time, but also for your bravery. We appreciate you and hope to speak to you again soon.
Thank you very much.
We're very grateful to Callie Means for his insight. Our next story, red flag. TSA rolls out new facial recognition technology at airports across America. Officers at 400 airports and growing will now order you to stand in front of a camera that will measure your facial features and compare them to your photo ID, similar to facial recognition technology used in China. But get this, TSA is assuring illegal migrants that they will not take their photo if they're not comfortable with it. Political commentator Dave Rubin shared a photo of a TSA sign at one airport explaining that migrants who crossed the border illegally and were given migrant ID numbers by Border Patrol do not have to show a photo ID and do not have to have their photo taken at all if they don't want to. Analysis by Ivory Hecker. Let's take a listen.
The TSA is rolling out new facial recognition technology at airports across America. Gateway Pundit reports it's happening at 400 airports across the U.S. in partnership with the Federal Department of Homeland Security. Officers at airports will order you to stand in front of a camera that will measure your facial features and compare them to your photo ID. Now, I just flew out of the Salt Lake City airport actually last month, and it was indeed what I was subjected to. I asked, is this facial recognition technology? And the agent was like, yeah, yes, it is. But don't worry, we won't save any of the data about you. Oh, okay, thanks. Well, this follows our report last week that TSA is assuring illegal migrants that they will not take their photo if they're not comfortable with it. Dave Rubin tweeted out this photo of the TSA sign at one airport explaining that migrants who crossed the border illegally and were given migrant ID numbers by Border Patrol do not have to show photo ID and do not have to have their photo taken at all if they don't want to. Now, this is despite the countless incidents that we've documented of Border Patrol not realizing that they're welcoming in a violent criminal. So U.S. citizens will be subjected to a new face scanning camera, but if you say you're a migrant, you can decline the camera. Interesting.
Yet another example of the powers that be giving more rights to illegal migrants whilst taking more rights away from law-abiding tax-paying citizens. The illegals stroll through the airports virtually untouched, yet the citizens who should be able to travel freely through their airports are being manhandled, touched up from head to toe, and treated like the criminals. Zero trust model for thee, but not for the ones actually committing a crime. Got it. Well, if the COVID pandemic taught us anything, it's that you have to take control of your own family's health. You can't rely on the government or Big Pharma. That's why so many of you count on Z-Stack. Did you know that there is a specially formulated version of Z-Stack made for people who took the vaccine? It's called Z-Detox. Z-Detox contains vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, NAC and ECGC. Dr. Zelenko's Z-Detox formula was especially created for individuals with weakened immune systems, especially those weakened by the COVID-19 vaccines and boosters. As most of you know, Dr. Vladimir Zelenko was the world-renowned doctor that President Trump credited with his successful early treatment protocol and his decision to take hydroxychloroquine. If you were forced to take the vaccine, if you have friends or family members who took the vaccine, order Z-Detox today and help your immune system fight back. Supercharge your immune system. Go to zstacklife.com/blackout and order today. Use promo code blackout to save an additional 15%. Our next story, a teacher has gone viral for teaching his students how to critically think. Imagine that headline in today's society. So teacher and filmmaker Warren Smith posts videos of classroom discussions, among other subjects, on his Secret Scholar Science Society YouTube channel. So Smith is basically opening the video asking his students what they want to talk about. This student says, I want to talk about the works of Harry Potter, whether you still like those works, considering J.K. Rowling is essentially bigoted, despite her bigoted opinions. And through this exercise of critical thinking, Smith is leading the student to an epiphany, not by forcing his own opinion of Rowling on the student, but by leading the student to examine his expressed view that Rowling is bigoted. It's fantastic. He goes on to pull up an example of, as you heard, the teacher asked him for an example. So he pulls up this example. Dress however you please, call yourself whatever you like, sleep with any consenting adult who'll have you, live your best life in peace and security, but force women out of their jobs for stating that sex is real? Question mark. The student then followed with a 2020 tweet by Rowling that he described as an apology, where she said, I respect every trans person's right to live in any way that feels authentic and comfortable to them. I'd march with you if you were discriminated against on the basis of being trans. At the same time, my life has been shaped by being female. I don't believe it's hateful to say so. And so you can see the teacher says to the student, do you find that bigoted? What do you find about that to be bigoted? The student then says, it was deemed transphobic. And the teacher asks him, do you find that transphobic? And the student says, oh, I don't really have an opinion. I'm just going with what a lot of other people have said. And so the teacher says to him, okay, let's pause. Let's not go with what other people are saying. Let's try and learn how to critically think. Let's analyze this. Do you see anything problematic with that statement? Disregarding other people's opinions. And the student says, well, she did try and pin some things on a specific group of people. The teacher says, where does she do that? Can you read that? The student identifies her statement of, but force women out of their jobs for stating that sex is real. And the teacher says, when I hear that, I'm interpreting that as meaning if a woman says that, you know, saying that there's a difference between men and female and then being attacked as transphobic, I think that's what she's saying by attacking someone for stating that sex is real. And the student agrees. That's exactly what she's saying. So the teacher says, well, again, is that transphobic to you? The student says, well, no, not to me. Stating that sex is real is not transphobic. It's just a fact of life. It exists. So the teacher again examines his thought process. Is there anything that you disagree with there? And the student says, well, I can't really see anything that I disagree with there. And he brings up an apology tweet as well. And the kid reads that. Where Rowling says, I respect every trans person's right to live in any way that feels authentic and comfortable to them, which we looked at before as well. And ultimately, it concludes with this.
So I guess now that we're looking at it like, oh, there's not much difference between me or her, do you think it's fair that she's being attacked by a large group of people and people are calling her, like you said at the beginning of this conversation, you said, given the fact that J.K. Rowling is transphobic, how do you feel about Harry Potter? Now, yeah. Retroactively looking at that statement, do you think that that was the best way to phrase?
No, I feel like an idiot now.
It's okay though, but this is why we do this, to learn how to think.
There's been like a, so in my class specifically, like in our class, there's been quite a few people in there who have been saying like, oh, she's transphobic. I've not, like, until today, I haven't really thought about it because I just believe like, oh, they, like, there's five people saying it. It must be correct. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. That was great.
It's actually heartbreaking hearing that student confirm that he feels like an idiot because ultimately he just went along with what others were saying rather than examining those statements for himself. Imagine society if every teacher was teaching in the same manner as Warren Smith. The world is definitely crying out for more teachers like this, and it definitely gives us hope. Our next report, inside the most ridiculous jobs report in recent history, we're actually going to take you through this in detail because it's very, very important. On the surface, it was a blockbuster jobs report, certainly one which nobody expected. Starting at the top, the BLS reported that in January, the US unexpectedly added 353K jobs, the most since January 2023, when the print was 482K compared to 131K, double the consensus forecast of 185K and more than the highest Wall Street estimate, which was 300K. In fact, this was a four sigma beat to estimate unheard of in the past year. The headline data was stellar across the board, starting with the unemployment rate, which once again failed to rise, denying expectations from Sarm's rule that a recession may have already started, all the way to average hourly earnings, which unexpectedly spiked from 4.1% to 4.5%, the highest since last September, and a slap in the face to the Fed's disinflation narrative. Or it would be if one didn't think of checking how the average rose. Well, it turns out that since average hourly earnings is a fraction, it did not rise due to a jump in actual wages, but since it is earnings over a period of time, rose because the BLS decided to sharply slash the number of estimated hours that everyone was working from 34.3 to just 34.1, which might not sound like a lot until one realizes that the last time the workweek was this low was when the economy was shut down during COVID. Excluding the COVID lockdowns, one would have to go back to 2010 to find a workweek that was this anemic. And speaking of revisions, we had a lot of those. In January, the BLS conducted its annual re-benchmarking and update of seasonal adjustment factors. Long story short, what was until December a decline in jobs has now been miraculously transformed into gains, as shown in the chart below. Now, for those asking, the revisions were unambiguously designed to give the impression that the labour market is slowing much less than it is. Consider this. Before the revision, the average monthly job gain in 2021 was largely unchanged. And while the average monthly gain in 2022 was revised lower, this was purposefully goal-seek to make 2023 appear stronger. And indeed, the average monthly increase in 2023 has been revised from 225K to 255K. We encourage everyone to go through this article in detail as all of the numbers are there. But this would be great if only it wasn't almost entirely due to the BLS's latest choice of seasonal adjustments, which have gone from merely laughable to full clown show, as the following comparison between the revised BLS payrolls number and the ADP payrolls show, the trend is clear. The Biden admin numbers are now clearly revising, even as the impartial ADP, which directly logs employment numbers at the company level and is actually far more accurate, shows an accelerating slowdown. And speaking of seasonal adjustments, just as the January print was all seasonals, because while the seasonally adjusted payrolls was up 353K, the unadjusted was down 2.635 million, a 3 million jobs delta. In other words, just a 10% error rate in the seasonal adjustment, roughly where it falls, would wipe out the entire gain and make January increase a decline. Then again, this is the case with every January jobs report because, as shown below, the annual change in jobs in the first month of the year is down anywhere between 2.5 million and 3 million. But it's more than just the Biden admin hanging its success on seasonal adjustments. When one digs deeper inside the jobs report, all sorts of ugly things emerge, such as the latest divergence between the establishment payrolls and much more accurate household actual employment survey. To wit, while in January the BLS claims 353,000 payrolls were added, the household survey found that the number of actually employed workers dropped again, this time by 31,000. This means that while the payroll series hits all-time highs every month since December 2020, when according to the BLS the US had its last month of payrolls losses, the level of employment has barely budged in the past year. Worse, as shown in the chart below, such a gaping divergence has opened between two series in the past 4 years that the number of employed workers would need to soar by 9 million to catch up to what payrolls claims is the employment situation. There's more. Shifting from a quantitative to qualitative assessment reveals just how ugly the composition of new jobs has been. Consider this. The BLS reports that in January 24, the US had 133.1 million full-time jobs and 27.9 million part-time jobs. Well, that's great until you look back 1 year and find that in February 23, the US had 133.2 million full-time jobs, or more than it does 1 year later. And yes, all the job growth since then has been in part-time jobs, which have increased by 870K since February 2023. Here's a summary of the labor composition in the past year. All the jobs have been part-time jobs. But there's even more. Because just as we enter the peak of election season and political talking points will be thrown around left and right, especially in the context of the immigration crisis created intentionally by the Biden administration, which is hoping to import millions of new Democratic voters, what we find is that in January, the number of native-born workers tumbled again, sliding by a massive 560,000 to just 129 million. Add to this the December data, and we get a near-record 1.9 million plunge in native-born workers in just the past 2 months. This is staggering. Not only has all job creation in the past 4 years been exclusively for foreign-born workers, but there has been zero job creation for native-born workers since July of 2018. This is a huge issue, as the article states, especially at a time of an illegal alien flood at the border, and it's about to become a huge political scandal because once the inevitable recession finally hits, there will be millions of furious, unemployed Americans demanding a more accurate explanation for what happened, i.e. the illegal immigration floodgates that were opened by the Biden admin. Which is also why the Biden admin will do everything in his power to ensure there is no official recession before November, and is why, after the election is over, all economic hell will finally break loose. Until then, however, expect the jobs numbers to get more and more ridiculous. This is all very relevant in light of the conversation we just had with Ed Dowd on Media Blackout last week. Listen to this. So your assumption is that they're going to try and hold off until the election. That may be the way that they go. Or they could absolutely collapse everything right before the election as a reason to, you know, bring in some sort of an emergency. Would you put that past them?
Well, I'm not in the room, but if they collapse it before the election, it's because they lost control. Right now, they're sticking fingers in the dike. The credit markets are, there's credit issues in commercial real estate. Regional bank stocks are cratering. The Federal Reserve is pausing interest rates, which if you look back in history, after every one of these big bubbles they blow, once they pivot and pause and start lowering interest rates, that's when the real economic damage comes. So we're right on the precipice of this. Also, money supply M2 went negative for the first time since 1930 in November of 2022. And there's usually an 18-month lag on monetary changes actually impacting the economy. So 18 months will be May. So the next 6 months for the establishment is very precarious. They're going to try to pump this up and keep it going. The jobs report in the U.S. just came out today. Anybody worth their salt has called this the most fraudulent jobs report we've ever seen. It's a joke. It's a complete joke. It's literally fraud is now on the government balance sheets. They're cooking the books.
Our next article, must watch the Democrats' 9-step plan to gaslight America and blame Trump for the border crisis. We've listed everything on the article outlined in this video, but I thought I'd just play you this fantastic video from Weston Lensman. Shout out to him for making this brilliant video. Let's take a watch.
The Democrat election playbook explained, a 9-step plan to blame Donald Trump for the border crisis. Step 1. Flood the country for 3 years with millions of illegal aliens. Step 2, watch approval numbers on the border drop below 20%. Step 3, election year is here. Decide you need to act now that you've let millions of illegals into the country and the American people are pissed. Step 4, line up some rhinos in the Senate to assist with the next phase of the plan. Step 5, work with the rhinos on a bipartisan basis to devise a garbage piece of legislation that would make the crisis considerably worse. Step 6, ensure the bill is so bad that it becomes toxic for Republicans. So much so that even the Republican rhino leadership who helped negotiate it is forced to abandon it. Step 7, message the doomed legislation as the strongest immigration and border bill in history, knowing the media will faithfully echo your propaganda. Step 8, claim the only reason Republicans abandoned the bill is because Trump wants to use the open border as a campaign issue. Step 9, adopt your new 2024 campaign mantra. The border crisis is Trump's fault.
Every day between now and November, the American people are going to know that the only reason the border is not secure is Donald Trump.
I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. In 2017, under President Donald Trump, the U.S. recorded its lowest number of illegal aliens entering the country in 47 years. Only 310,000 made it across the border in 2017. That is 1/10 the number that walked across Joe Biden's open borders in 2023. 3.2 million, the highest number ever by far. That's via Kanakoa the Great. Here, you've got the numbers of nationwide border encounters under Trump and Biden. You can have a look at those numbers there. Kanakoa says, President Biden says the border crisis is President Trump's fault, but this is obviously insane gaslighting, and it's clear there. And Stephen Miller says, the first bill Biden sent to Congress was a bill to make illegal aliens into voting citizens. He terminated every Trump deportation policy, ordered ICE to halt removals, and commanded CBP to start mass releasing illegal aliens into America. Biden organized and ordered the invasion. To think that Biden could still blame Trump for anything this far into his presidency is absolutely ludicrous, but nonetheless, he continues to do so. It's clear to a growing number of people who's truly responsible for the invasion at the border. Do you think that Democrat voters are waking up? Let us know in the comments below. Scientists have studied the Swampy Cree Native American tribe for years, wondering how they maintain such exceptional health. In addition to a diet of simple, natural, and raw foods, the Cree's ancient practice of consuming bison organs is credited with their exceptional health. Their bison organs are one of the most nutrient-rich, bioavailable, and sustainable sources of vital nutrients known to man. These bison organs are Mother Nature's miracle, providing nutritional and hormonal support like no other food source on Earth, and now they are available to us from the great company Naked Organs. Bison Trifecta, the company's best-selling product, supports heart health, cognitive function, athletic performance, nurtures liver health, provides immune support, and combats inflammation. Go to holisticgoddess.com/blackout and order today. Use promo code blackout to save an additional 10%. Well, in a disaster, and I mean an absolute disaster of a press conference, Joe Biden has inadvertently made the case for invoking the 25th Amendment. Late Wednesday afternoon, long-forgotten Robert Hur's special counsel's office released its report on the current President Joe Biden's mishandling of classified documents found in his Delaware home and think tank early last year. Whilst most of the public and the news media's attention has been fixated on that other ongoing special counsel investigation, the one led by Jack Smith into President Donald J. Trump, Hur quietly continued his investigation into exactly how several tranches of still classified documents ended up being found in Biden's possession and were stored in his house while he was a private citizen from 2017 through 2021. In his report today, Hur finds fault with how Biden willfully kept and retained classified materials after leaving office, but made the decision not to prosecute Biden for it due to Biden's being, and I'm not making this up, a kindly elderly man with cognitive issues and a very bad memory. Here's the section of his report where Hur's team, despite Biden's lawyers strenuously objecting to it, discusses Biden's cognitive difficulties. In his interview with the special counsel, Biden did not remember when he was vice president. It says, in his interview with our office, Mr. Biden's memory was worse. He did not remember when he was vice president, forgetting on the first day of the interview when his term ended. Quote, if it was 2013, when did I stop being vice president? And forgetting on the second day of the interview when his term began. In 2009, am I still vice president? It goes on to say, in addition to this shortage of evidence, there are other innocent explanations for the documents that we cannot refute. When Mr. Biden told his ghostwriter he just found out all the classified stuff downstairs, he could have been referring to something other than the Afghanistan documents, and our report discusses these possibilities in detail. Here's the key bit. We have also considered that, at trial, Mr. Biden would likely present himself to a jury, as he did during our interview of him, as a sympathetic, well-meaning, elderly man with a poor memory. Based on our direct interactions with and observations of him, he is someone for whom many jurors will want to identify reasonable doubt. It would be difficult to convince a jury that they should convict him, by then a former president well into his 80s, of a serious felony that requires a mental state of willfulness. So basically, the guy's not fit to stand before a jury, but he's somehow fit to run a country. And so we really do encourage everyone to read the details of the argument that could be made for the invocation of the 25th Amendment on the Vigilant News Network. Our top story this week, right before we're joined by Dr. McCullough himself, he's warned of a one-world government coming our way. He's warned of the WHO's involvement in this. We all know Tedros has said we need to stop the misinformation and spoken about the fact that, you know, it's not a matter of if there's going to be another pandemic, but when. We encourage everyone to watch that video of him saying that on the Vigilant News Network. And of course, we know that they met at Davos earlier this year to talk about disease X, and Dr. McCullough's made statements. How can they prepare for something that doesn't even exist yet? Dr. McCullough is quoted in the article, they, the WHO and WEF, are dreaming about more vaccines, antibodies, therapeutics, and worldwide control based on disease X, as opposed to eliminating disease X or any potential biological threat that could come our way. That's evident by all the biolabs they keep open. Why is that, he's asked? He answers, the short answer is, there is too much money in it. The money now in this biological threat countermeasure world is enormous, he continued. We found that out with COVID-19, and we see all kinds of runaway programs. Moderna has 31 messenger RNA vaccines. 31, Dr. McCullough stressed. I was also recently alerted to this very strange article on Science Alert stating there is apparently an entirely new class of life that's been found in the human digestive system they're calling obelisks. So I wanted to ask Dr. McCullough about that too. He joins us now. Dr. Peter McCullough, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Well, we have much to discuss today. We have the topic of vaccine-induced autoimmune deficiency syndrome. We've had Dr. Birx recently coming on talking about how long COVID is responsible for that. We also have this very interesting new discovery of this entirely new class of life has been found in the human digestive system, obelisks. I probably want to start there, Dr. McCullough. What on earth is this?
This is a new discovery of actually mining data. So researchers mine data of discarded fragments of RNA that they thought maybe didn't really associate with anything, and discovered that there's a virus which has all the machinery to invade and replicate. There's a viroid, which is a piece of circular RNA that can't replicate. And now there's something in between called an obelisk, and it's a strand of RNA that makes a hairpin turn. So it looks like an obelisk, and it does actually have a replicative enzyme. So this is quite interesting. They appear to infect bacteria in our GI tract in a commensal fashion, but it's, you know, it goes to show you why all research should report their genetic code that they've discovered to these federal databases. And you know, Ralph Baric, Anthony Fauci, Peter Daszak, and Xingling Li, they're the four co-conspirators in SARS-CoV-2, the SARS-like Wuhan Institute of Virology virus, in the papers 2015, Nature Medicine 2016, PNAS, they refuse to report the code of what they created to these databases. So, you know, probably because out of fear that it exactly matches what came out of the lab.
Well, my question is, they're saying that these mysterious bits of genetic material have no detectable sequences or even structural similarities known to any other biological agents. So is this possible that this has happened as a result of the injection specifically?
No, I think it predates that. They look commensal. Remember, viruses can invade a bacteria or ride along. People are asking teleologically, what's the purpose? Remember, bacteria are the ones that actually have CRISPR technology. They can gene edit out. That's their main defense against viruses. But these are clearly unique. They appear living. And now the goal is to figure out their purpose. This is almost like the undersea world of Jacques Cousteau, diving down deep and finding something brand new.
On the topic of CRISPR, just this week, Tucker Carlson and President Putin conducted an interview, and President Putin made a statement that basically the AI revolution, and I'm paraphrasing here, and gene editing is not going to stop. Do we have concerns about CRISPR, how far it's going to go? Do you know, Dr. McCullough, whether any of your colleagues are actually concerned about this?
Well, CRISPR technology applied to human DNA proposes the idea of gene editing. You know, if it was gene editing out of a pathological polymorphism, that could be a wonderful medical revolution. And yet how to distribute it to every cell in the body, and particularly germ cells, all that would need to be worked out. But if it was used for nefarious purposes, to cripple the human genome, for instance, it could be a disaster. And with all these biolabs out there, you know, the trust of people in the world regarding the beneficence of biolabs is zero right now. In fact, when we think of biolabs, we think of creation of harmful organisms.
Right. And Dr. Birx recently came out and said, oh, you know, basically HIV, people that got COVID and long COVID, this is, they're showing up now as having HIV, and tried to really muddy the waters there. We've been speaking about vaccine-induced autoimmune deficiency syndrome for some time. Is long COVID causing this in people, Dr. McCullough, or is it actually the injection?
Remember, VADS, or vaccine-associated immune deficiency syndrome, is an official term of reference introduced by Dr. Melissa McCann in Australia. So for the Australian inquiry, Deborah Birx, the infamous scarf lady, was on with Chris Cuomo, who is, you know, Chris is actually in our book, Courage to Face COVID-19, with his brother, Andrew, in the chapter 11 titled Cuomo Sexuals. So you have to pick up a copy of my book and see what that's all about. But, you know, he fell from grace on CNN, and he's interviewing Birx on News Nation. And then she says, well, long COVID is like HIV. We said, wait a minute. There's now a handful of papers, Bala Subramanian being one, that have reported people with COVID, you know, turning HIV positive, even though the HIV virus isn't there. And then people have taken the vaccine. Now, the numbers are very, very low, but it happens because part of the manufactured structure of SARS-CoV-2 is a glycoprotein that shares similarity to HIV. Now, the question on the table is, it's not HIV, we know that, but could this glycoprotein have an HIV-like effect and cripple the immune system? More and more data suggest both COVID, the infection, and the vaccines over and over again actually reduce our body's immune defenses. We've already seen adenoviral hepatitis outbreak, reports of leprosy, reports of other viral illnesses, streptococcal, bacterial infections. I'm seeing this in my practice. I do think both the vaccine and COVID seem to knock down the immune system.
Well, it certainly seems that way. And of course, there's a complete denial from the authorities that the injections do this. They'll go on and on about long COVID all day, but zero admission about the injections, which brings me to my next point. The World Health Organization is calling on young people to come and, you know, stop the misinformation, help bring the misinformation to an end, and support the WHO, who have persistently lied to the population and given the worst possible health advice that you could imagine. And so you've recently warned that we're essentially on the verge of a one world government. What do you think that the World Health, what role do you think the World Health Organization plays in this?
I think they're really at the epicenter of this new world order orchestrated through this global control dominion, actually over all plants, animals, and humans, the ability to call medical emergencies and then have the countermeasures effectively become forces of totalitarian control. I want people to understand, when you hear the words misinformation, disinformation, malinformation, anti-science, anti-vaxxer, conspiracy theorist, those are all propaganda terms that were used in the office of Goebbels, the office of propaganda in Nazi Germany. This is from basically a Nazi playbook. So anytime you hear these words, they don't exist in science. They don't exist in clinical medicine. They're simply, you know, a new medical problem, multiple points of view. Don't let anybody use those words, certainly in, you know, our collective vernacular. The WHO has said this, as well as many American societies, that the single greatest health threat is misinformation. You know, they're not worried about cancer or heart disease or other problems now. Their focus is misinformation. There's many medical conferences on misinformation, medical papers written on misinformation. It's a propaganda construct, and we need to reject it in all of its instances.
Well, how do you think people should go about that moving forward? I mean, there are a lot of people now who are realizing the threat of big pharma, the threat of really the government and the New World Order, but they weren't aware previously, Dr. McCullough. So how should people distinguish between truth and lies in this time?
They should look for discussion. Where you see discussion of information, you're likely going to see the truth emerge. Don't accept anything on blind faith, someone asserting that they hold the truth and everyone else holding misinformation. That's actually a red flag for a propagandist, to tell you the truth. And I think we should turn these words around. Simply say, listen, let's discuss the data. It's emerging sources of information. We're not anti-vaxxers. We simply are aware of vaccine risks. We're not conspiracy theorists because we have rational ideas. We're rational theorists and we need to discuss it. So where we see honest roundtable discussion, truth will emerge.
Absolutely agree with you. One more question for you, Dr. McCullough. The topic of the DNA changes in human beings and the DNA recently, the frame shifting discovery as well. We've recently had Dr. David Wiseman on the broadcast. What are your thoughts about all of this? What are the new discoveries in this area, and what hope does humanity have?
Well, there's great hope for the unvaccinated. Let me tell you that as long as we can get through COVID, the body can recover from it. COVID alone is difficult. Listen, I don't want to underplay it. I've seen the effects in myself and family members. But the vaccines are at a whole different level. You know, the vaccines install a massive amount of genetic material in the body, far more than the infection. Spike protein reflections of this in antibodies are through the roof. Even 3 years later, the messenger RNA appears to be long lasting, not broken down by ribonucleases or other natural ways of getting rid of it. The spike protein looks like we can help assist its catabolism with nattokinase, bromelain, and curcumin. Maybe others will come on board. So we're working very hard along those lines. But I'm greatly concerned that people who have taken multiple injections now have a permanent form of genetic toxicity in their body. And we're going to be seeing the health consequences for this sometime to come. Everybody, in my view, ought to start on spike detoxification as the first step. We're working on ways of getting this genetic detoxification, some type of systematic way of getting the vaccine out of the body or the remnants of it. The vaccine must be more than just Pfizer or Moderna code for DNA or Janssen and AstraZeneca, because not only are there DNA process-related impurities that have been found, but there are frame-shifted proteins, as you mentioned, or little peptides that are coming off with either fragments, partially read code in these fragments. They're all expressed on cell surfaces. They're all identified as non-human, and then the body makes an attack. So we are seeing now autoimmune syndromes that arise years after the shots, probably because of these frame-shifted peptides being expressed on cell surfaces.
And you mentioned genetic toxicity. I think for the viewers, please clarify, what does that actually mean and what could it lead to?
You know, human genetic material is always managed. It's created, it's disposed of, it's purposeful, codes for proteins, codes for, you know, cell regulatory processes. When the body is given external genetic code, that's coding for non-human activities and non-human proteins, we have now seen credible evidence of toxicity. Recently, just out, a paper by Lin and colleagues, this is very disturbing, showing messenger RNA, Pfizer, Moderna, in placental tissue and now in the cord blood of freshly vaccinated pregnant women. So we know that babies are getting the messenger RNA right now. We're in a brave new world of, will this genetic material influence organogenesis? Will it have toxicities in the baby? Will it result in long-term developmental disorders? All of this is on the table.
Well, you mentioned Brave New World. It certainly sounds like it, Dr. McCullough. We're very, very grateful for you and all of the researchers dedicating their time to finding out more about this. We'll be in touch very soon. Thank you, Dr. McCullough.
Thank you.
A huge thank you to Dr. Peter McCullough for joining us today, a truly insightful and knowledgeable man of honor who's been fighting since day one for humanity. It's been another jam-packed broadcast of the top stories the media does not want you to know. It's quite clear we're living in strange times indeed, full of deception and media lies, but you can count on us to bring you the truth every week without fail. That's all we have time for this evening. Thank you all for joining us tonight. Please make sure to share this broadcast, like and repost it. Make sure to give Vigilant Fox and the Vigilant News Network a follow on X. You can also find me on X at @Z_media. That's Z with 3 E's _media. Check the Vigilant News Network website throughout the week to stay up to date. And we'll see you next Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Until then, stay informed, stay vigilant.